your source for everything paranormal. Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Grews, your host tonight, and this is the Journey Radio Show. Tonight, we're talking about Bigfoot, so of course, I've got Jenna Grover, my fellow She Squatcher, on the line. Hey, Jenna, are you there?
I am. Excited about tonight.
Me too. Awesome, awesome, awesome. You know I love Bigfoot, right?
Oh, yes.
Well, We're welcoming Daniel Benoit from East Coast Bigfoot Research Organization on the show tonight. He's got lots to tell us about. He's got had some hair-raising experiences, and I'm hoping he'll tell us all about those. He is the founder of East Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, and he is heading up the ECBRO Virginia Bigfoot Conference this year, and I'm so excited we're going to be there. Whoop! So let's not waste any more time. Let's bring Daniel on. Hey, Daniel, are you there?
Mm-hmm. Hello. Yes, I sure am. I am glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. We're so thrilled that you said yes, you'd join us on the show tonight. I know everybody else is excited. Oh, Chris is in the chat room saying, who knew Bigfoot? Such surprise. Surprise. So I'm sorry to anybody out there who's trying to get in the chat room and is having trouble. I know that they have a new format. I heard a couple people saying they're having trouble getting in. So thank you for listening anyway. Lots of people are listening on radio apps and whatnot, but our chat room, our live chat room, is at para-x.com if you'd like to join in the chat. So here we are with Daniel Benoit out of Virginia. How's the Bigfoot out there, Daniel?
Well, I will say they're very big. They're very hairy. Well, right now, I will say this time of year, they actually have been quiet. It's funny. It's one thing a lot of us pay attention to throughout the seasons. A lot of us that actually really take this serious. It's certain times of year where we actually get familiar with their activity. You're normally around the early to late spring to early to mid fall is usually one of the most active times of the year. And during the winter times, you know, we know a lot of wildlife, they settle down, they kind of bunker, they don't get as active. Same thing with the squatches. But you know, a few of us actually noticed some change this year. We know the winter's been mild, but when we were going through some cold weathers here, a few of us were taking notice, and there's been a little spike in activity. You know, this seemed very random, kind of caught a lot of us off guard, mainly particularly out of the state of North Carolina. North Carolina's actually been kind of booming with some activity. I'm waiting to hear some updates. I haven't heard nothing recently, but this has been within the last few months here. Give or take, there actually has been some fairly recent, I'm not going to say fresh, but here in the state of Virginia, just off of some of my observations out in the field recently, some of the findings I have come across, mainly particularly pertaining to foot tracks. Well, I actually have come across some recent foot tracks, but they weren't quite fairly fresh, but they weren't old either. Some of these tracks, some of them are hard to determine how old they are because of the way they have been weathered, diluted. But there's no denying that they are humanoid tracks. Although some you may not completely make out the toes and some of the details, some on the other hand, you can't deny it. it's, you know, it's awesome. Because, you know, as far as identifying a foot track, regardless of what species it is, bear, human, boot, whatever, yeah, there's always a way to determine what it is. Just as far as age, this that there could be a little tricky. So, but yeah, but the squadrons here, pretty much here in Virginia, like I said, they've been a little slow, quiet. But I will promise you, give it another month or two, you'll start seeing some more activity. So, yes.
Do you think they migrate?
You know, that's a good question. I've actually been asked that question quite often, and in all honesty, I do believe they. I do believe that they do. You know, this part of it's to do with the seasons. Like, you know, I was just talking about how, you know, I felt some of us were kind of shocked or surprised to know that there's been a boom in activity here this last few months. Well, just like deer. And, you know, and this is one thing I study and I observe and research a lot of wildlife, you know, throughout the years, a lot of wildlife, you know, they like deer, for example, I'll use deer. And well, be honest with you, this could go for any bit of wildlife. A lot of them like to retreat to the higher ground, higher ground. And well, where the food goes, the squatches go, you know, now, I can't speak for every location, but I know particularly my area, which is a very large area, the rivers, the streams, sometimes we go through a dry season. The rivers and streams dry up, and where they're normally flowing real good. We know the bears, the deer, coyotes, all the predators, all the known wildlife, they know the food, the water sources. They know where the food is. And the thing is, if it disappears, if it goes, they're going to go. You know, that's going to force them to travel, force them to move to where, you know, or, you know, to explore for more. And it's like kind of like us. If we have to evacuate an area, we know where to go. Just like them, they know the area. They, you know, wildlife is not stupid. They're very intelligent. They have their instinct. I do believe they migrate and travel for various reasons. And I do believe they do come back to their particular area that, you know, one particular area, my research area, I'll break this down real quick. It's broken down into zones. I got zone one, zone two, zone three. Well, one zone borders another state because it's a very vast remote forest that runs into West Virginia. And then down on the lower portion, which is more of a southeast location, you know, and then you got more of a central area. So zone one is more central, the way I look at it, because I have a geographical map where I have a whole layout of my area. Well, zone one is a very active area. There's been a lot of attention I've given that based off of my experiences, others' experiences. Now, don't get me wrong, there is other happenings around the surrounding area. And so in that one particular area, it's been my main focus. Now, every so often, I'll break off and I will go explore into these other areas or zones, as I mentioned. Well, but I always come back to this one particular area. Again, it wasn't just because of the experiences, the encounters, but there's been a lot of, you know, findings I have come across in there. And I haven't been alone in these. A majority of the time when something happens there, or if I'm finding something there, a majority of the time I'm not alone. I'm usually accompanied by other fellow members, other researchers, or people I have taken out there to let them get familiar with the area. So. Yep.
How many people do you normally go out with when you take them out into the woods to look for Bigfoot?
Well, that honestly really depends. If it's a planned expedition, of course, right there, that's going to vary on who plans on attending. Most of the time, if it's a planned expedition, it's not a real big crowd. It usually averages maybe 6 to 8 people. I think our last one had up to 8, maybe 10. Of course that was included, you know, family, you know, some of my family was involved, my daughter and you know, my actually last one my father actually attended, which I'm glad he did, because, you know, as much as I'm always sharing with him, you know, he got to experience just a little bit. He had gone into his tent, you know, this was back in, actually, this was actually late 2016. Yeah, this was 2016. And as much as I'm always telling him about what's happening out there, you know, and the thing is, you never know when it's going to happen. It's not planned. I mean, nothing's planned that happens to us or what we might hear. But one particular night, when he was with us, he had just gone down into his tent to lay down. He probably wasn't in there about 10 minutes. We're all sitting, the rest of us are sitting around the campfire, just talking nonchalant. And, you know, just from out of nowhere, we're just sitting there. And right outside of camp, across the forest road, in that same section of woods, in that one area where everything happens, well, you know, we're sitting there just with our heads down, quiet. Somebody or something, it sounded like, take a Louisville Slugger and double the size of it, swinging at full force, going up against one of those tall pines across the road. We have a lot of tall, heavy, big pines in our area. And something with a lot of force, you know, took a good swing, and that when it connected, when that wood on wood connected, there was no denying that there was a serious knock. You know, that knock was pretty much almost, I don't want to say felt, but it's like it made you stand up. And of course, my father came out of his tent, and I was already standing up already before he came out. And first thing he said was like, "I heard that." And I was like, I was kind of laughing at him. I pointed in the direction where it came from. I said, "I told you." So, you know, but he was excited. He was like a little kid himself. He loved it though. And then after that, there happened other movement. You know, we've heard other movement. We've heard distant vocals, you know, coming off the ridges and everything. So it's like, it just from that one tree knock, that one particular night, it kind of like turned, it's like turning on a light switch. Although, you know, all this energy started flowing, all this activity. I mean, I've gotten activity from other things before, but not off of a tree knock, you know. So it was kind of exciting. You know, we all got excited. It was me, you know, my fellow researcher partner, Greg Corbin. We were accompanied also by his wife and his son. Of course, like I said, I had my daughter with me and my father. And then we had another couple that was with us, Ed and April. So, but it was real good. We had a great time that weekend. And I say weekend, it was actually pretty much a week. I think we had two good days out of that whole week. The rest were whatever, give or take. You know, because if we didn't experience something, we were finding cool stuff. You know, pretty much. So, and that's usually how it works. I mean, you don't know what to expect. You know, even though sometimes we visit some of the same areas frequently or every so often, just to observe to see if there's change there, you know. A lot of times I love to go traveling. I love to hike and explore very deep into the woods. But, I got to remember, I got to learn to start considering the people I have with me. Because, well, I think when people go like to explore, they want to go on a hike, I think they're, you know, I don't think they're on the same page as when I go on a hike. You better be prepared because I'm going. I'm, you know, prepare for miles to be put on your feet. You know, that's how I am. I mean, I don't know. A lot of people say I'm fast out in the woods. Like, I turn around, everybody's like, "I'm like, guys, where are you?" You know, so it's like, they're like, "You walk too fast." I said, "No, I don't." They said, "Well, you got long legs." I said, "I don't think I do, but okay, you know." So I don't know. I'm just used to hiking in the woods, you know. So yeah, it's just me.
Yeah. But we've already got questions coming in the chat room, Daniel. So here, let's start out. I'm just going to say, we've got a message here that says, "Hey Jen, hey Dan, Blimp here, repping from the Southern Illinois Monster Hunters. Whoop to those guys out there." And then he's asking, "Why do you think that people are so quick to dismiss Bigfoot as a misidentified bear?"
Why are they so quick to dismiss Bigfoot as a misidentified bear?
Yes.
In my opinion, I believe it's for them having a very closed mind. You know, I have to be careful how I will address this according to the way, you know, I would do it any other way. But I want us to be honest with you, you know, without anyone taking any offense. I want to use the word, it's neglect or ignorance. I don't know if ignorance is a proper word, but it comes down to having a closed mind. Somebody that is not willing to consider, you know, they are, you know, actually Zach, by the way, I want to give a shout out to Zach anyway. He's my MC for this year's event. He actually, I don't know if I can quote this the way he said. He says it just right. You know, basically, he, you know, people that believe one way, you know, that want to deny Bigfoot, the existence of Bigfoot in general, the way he puts it, and I agree with him, you know, wholeheartedly, where they have it set in their mind where, I'm trying to think the best way to put this, but he puts it just right. It makes a lot of sense. It's just, yeah, they don't want to destroy their world that they're already living in. They're happy, content, you know, pretty much in the world that they live in. They don't want something new to come in to disrupt that, to change their way of thinking, because, you know, like, you got a lot of old timers that are stuck in their way pretty much, you know? So yeah, Zach actually puts it a little bit more, you know, more professional sounding. I just can't think of that term.
Yeah, I would say that people fear what they do not understand.
Absolutely.
And so they're more likely to reject what they fear because of that.
Right.
So there's that. And I always say the best way to defeat that fear is to start to understand it and explore if that is that real or not for yourself. So that's why I do what I do.
I'm wondering, then a lot of people must fear me because they probably don't understand me. So, I mean, because I think I'm quite often misunderstood, you know, and that's the thing. I try so hard. Maybe it's because I am trying so hard to get people to understand my viewpoints on a lot of things. You know, right. You know, I always find it a more formative when I type it or write it down. You know, my verbal, you're trying to project what's in my mind, doesn't always come out as clear as I like it to. I think little by little I'm getting better at it, but you know, so let me put it on paper or put it in a blog. It'll make more sense.
I think you sound great just the way you are, because, yeah, you know, I always complain about myself not being able to communicate as efficiently as I want to, but right. I think you're doing a great job. So never think that.
Well, thank you. Like I said, I've sometimes your mind runs into a roadblock, like, crap, what was I going to say? Or how am I going to say something? You know, that's always been my biggest concern, but you know, you know, I have fun with it, but you know.
So in the chat room, they're saying people want to live life thinking that they have everything figured out in life and would rather deny the what if factors than face the facts. And then Kat says, because the what if is fearful to them and they'd much rather live in their safe little bubble of belief.
Yep.
Right? That's absolutely exactly right. Kat has a question for you. I think it's a really good one. She says, I wonder if Squatch eat deer and are fairly intelligent, might there be bones that they use for tools that we've maybe mistaken for early Native American tools? What do you think?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. And that should get a lot of people thinking. But for one thing, I honestly do believe that they eat deer. I do believe they eat meat. And as far as the bone things, that's possible. I think this is where I'm going to break this down, and I do not expect anybody to believe me or agree with my viewpoint on this. This is where I'm going to take Bigfoot, and this is where I take Bigfoot and do a comparison to our known non-human primates. We got chimpanzees, gorillas, bonobos, the billy ape, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of natural, common, documented behaviors and traits that these, you know, these creatures do, that, you know, that we observe here in the United States of America. Anywhere from, you know, I'll start with the behaviors such as the tree knocks, the vocals, you know, even some of the foot casts, even though they compared who ate more of a human like me and you, and which we're considered human primates. So our non-human primates, we need to, I think, for a little bit, regardless of what you believe Bigfoot to be, take a second and just think about a non-human primate. A lot of you guys, a lot of people in the world have no clue what they're responsible for, what they're known for doing, the vocalizations. their behaviors, their actions. What are they doing? You know, some of the things that they practice. You know, people neglect, well, because they're considered more of an animal, and therefore are looked lesser upon than me and you. So there's a lot of neglect when people will belittle them and their intelligence. So take a second to think about what they do. If you're familiar with it, if you don't, well, I'll be glad to explain anything. You know, when it comes, I'm not a primatologist, but I do take a step in the field of zoology where I took it upon myself to self-teach myself to do some research into in the world of primates, because I wanted to get a better understanding. Basically, when I started looking into Bigfoot, the deeper I got, I was like, well, if I'm going to start studying something that's considered unknown, I need to study something that fairly closely relates, that is known, and then start observing, going back and forth, taking notes on both sides. Well, we're experiencing this here. We're finding this here. But wait a minute. Here's an animal. Here's a creature that does this all the time. All right. So now we have a tool. Now we have a starting point. And we have something to compare it to. Do we have proof that the two are – I'm not calling the two equal, but there is a resemblance. There is a comparison, something to match. And that's where a lot of people neglect that understanding. There's too much to compare that relates back and forth. Primates, a gorilla, chimpanzee, they stomp the ground, they slap the ground, they break trees, they snap trees, they do tree knocks, they do rock stacks, they eat a baboon, they chase and run down deer, in Malibu, you know, they eat, yeah, these are common things that they're known for doing, but their diet also consists of a lot of vegetarian, they're more of, they're omnivores, where, you know, in my belief, now this is where I take another piece of known wildlife and use this in a comparison. Bears, for example, a bear's diet is basically 80% vegetarian, about 20% meat. Now, bears, they're pretty massive. They're big animals. You know, you figure they carry a lot of body weight, a lot of fat. They need to maintain those calories. Then you got an apex predator. We'll call it I don't want to call Bigfoot a predator, but he's a very large, massive being. He is known to be massive. So you figure they got to take in so many calories, daily calories, to survive throughout life. And you got to consider the protein calories, et cetera, et cetera. What are they going to do to maintain that? You know, so look at, you got deer. Deer's, you know, is a very good source of meat. It's lean, got a lot of protein, you know. But you look, you've got a layout of all this vegetation. You know, you got in the Pacific Northwest and right here in Virginia, got a large abundance of the ferns. We got areas out here that look like the Pacific Northwest, but we got it in small little patches. They got it. They got a whole forest out there, you know. So, you know, so we do have the sources out here for them to strive off of all this. But as far as I know, I've kind of taken this a little off course. But to break it down, to answer the question about deer, yes, most definitely I believe that. I have never found any evidence of the tools of the bones being used, but I'm not going to deny that because I believe that is a very strong possibility.
Are there any primates that make tools or use tools?
All the primates do. All the primates do. Whatever their imagination or their intelligence directs them to, more or less. I mean, we know that they'll use a simple stick. You know, they use stones. The primates have been observed banging, crushing things. They're not stupid. If there's a will, there's a way, and they'll do it. So very much so.
Wonderful. Yeah. And here they're asking in the chat room, would you think that Sasquatch, being such a huge creature and needing so many calories to power their huge bodies, would you say that Sasquatch would be resort to ambush hunting or scavenging?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I believe it's a combination. You know, I've been in a lot of conversations, a lot of discussions with other fellow researchers with this. And a lot of people do believe that Bigfoot is a scavenger hunter. Basically, a lot of people believe, and I tend to believe the same thing when it comes to squatches following the coyotes. Coyotes are group hunters, okay? And when they make a deer kill or whatever it is, there's going to be so much remains left over. Now, the thing is, if Bigfoot, I do believe that Bigfoot, he'll either wait till they're done with what they have, or there's a possibility. Again, I said possibility, and you'll hear me say possibility a lot, because I'm not stating facts of nothing. But I do believe that there is a possibility of maybe Bigfoot might interfere before they even get started. If they make that kill to get that animal down, it just made Bigfoot's job a lot easier, you know. But then at the same time, I do believe that Bigfoot can be a ambush predator. We know mountain lions, cougars, so forth. Those are ambush predators. But Bigfoot, I believe they're very, if they want to be, yes, they can be. For the very fact, when we're out in the woods, I will say, and I will tell anybody, believe this, you may not see them, but they're watching you, and they're a lot closer to you than you realize. I've been very close, I can't say I've seen them that close, like within feet. Then again, I can. But I've been in situations where even though I'm not seeing nothing, that sense comes over you. Your body's telling you something. You're starting to get that chilling feeling that your body's telling you, giving you that warning. There's something there. You better pay attention to that. So most
right,
definitely.
Right.
So.
In Minnesota, yes. That they are ambush predators. That lead to that, because we find a lot of evidence of them in gravel pits. Like they're hanging out at the top, jumping down and going after the deer that are at the bottom. Because we were standing in one place at the bottom of a gravel pit one time. And it was an unused gravel pit. It hasn't been used for a long time. So there's like foliage growing in there now. But I'm standing down there looking at all these deer parts and deer fur and deer bones all over. And I said, I think we're standing on the dinner plate.
Wow. Wow.
And we did find a big footprint going up the hill from there.
Well, I do recall you shared some pictures with me not long ago, and there was a trackway. That was actually, I found that impressive.
That was a different gravel pit. Ooh. We find them in gravel pits like crazy.
Well, shazam.
Shazam.
For funny. Right?
See, it seems to be gravel pits that are not being worked readily, not that have workers in them every day, that maybe they're old gravel pits that are not used anymore, or maybe that's rarely used.
Gotcha. So
check those out to see what because they're easy to spot there.
Well, right here in Virginia, we have, what's more common in certain areas, we have what they call shale pits, which, sometimes out in the middle of the woods or on random forest logging roads, you'll come across, areas like this. There's been a couple of areas. One is actually in my main research area where it's an old logging road. Well, some of them consider it a Jeep trail, but it's not, it's very rough. It's not maintained at all. And I've done some camping up there, and tell you what, it's even if you don't experience nothing, just being up there is very eerie enough being up there. But right after when you first got to the first top part of it, when you first get up, you start down on one lower log, forest road, and this Jeep trail kind of slowly works its way up, and then when it first comes up to the first level spot, that's all you're looking at is basically it looks like a big it's like a loose gravel on the side of going up on the ridge, and it's all it's mainly shale, and I'm always looking at it. You got a dirt bottom and then all the loose shale going up, and it's kind of some people consider it like a rock shale pit, but it's just I'm always looking for stuff around those things. For some reason, I'm always drawn to those kind of areas if I come across them, to pay attention to them. But they're not common, but yet they are. It depends on where you go. Some of the mountain ranges around there, the hills, there's, you have a lot of, stone or rock ledges and stuff like that. I like to look around those kind of areas. But
Awesome. Well, we are at the half the show right already. Can you believe it? We need to take a 2-minute break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, everyone.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Demons, vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show.
I'm Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and will, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they're not dead, we know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files. Only on Para-X.
For the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, and this is the Journey Radio Show. You can find us online at thejourneyradioshow.com or check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thejourneyonradio. And again, I am part of the She Squatchers. I've got Jenna Grover on with me. You can check us out there at shesquatchers.com and again on facebook.com/shesquatchersofficial. Remember, She Squatchers Official is also how you can find our YouTube channel. So please do check us out there, too. Tonight we're talking Bigfoot, with Daniel Benoit from East Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, otherwise known as ECBRO. He is the founder of that wonderful organization, and he's also heading up this year's ECBRO Virginia Bigfoot Conference. I can't wait. Can you tell us a little bit about the conference, Daniel?
Well, I sure can. We're in March. We're what, 3 months away here. June 30th and July 1st. I'll repeat this again. Make sure everybody, you got your pens and paper out. Mark this on your calendar. You're going to want to be there June 30th and July 1st in Fishersville, Virginia at the Augusta Expo. Our conference, this is our first annual event. Tell you what, we've actually been planning this. It's been slowly coming together for over a year now. And I know, you know, a lot of people that are involved in these that are well-established, they don't do all, you know, some of them can throw this together in a matter of a few months. But I wanted to make sure this was going to be done right and to work out all the little kinks and bugs. I'm still doing that. Well, I will tell you what, it's actually been very rewarding. Everything's been falling into place. We have a very nice venue set up. We have several confirmed guest speakers. We're going to have so many awesome vendors. The vendors are still growing. It's exciting because not only is it a two-day event, we have – this event is followed by a week-long of camping because we are going into our annual Bigfoot camping expedition. And the camping itself is completely free. It's primitive camping. All we ask is that you bring your own food, gear, shelter, and make sure you bring plenty of lights. And I hope you're not scared of the dark because there's a lot of noises out there. There's a lot of wildlife that you're probably not familiar with, and it's a learning experience. I've been out there with a lot of newbies, and tell you what, it's exciting to hear how they react, and you know, just to give them the insight. It's just a now. It's just a, you know, but our event, I'll tell you what, there's always something new being added. We've got, when I say we have several confirmed guest speakers, some of our speakers are very well known in the Bigfoot world, such as the Ohio Night Stalkers, Mike Miller and Mike Feltner. I am so looking forward to meeting them for the first time. I'm not as lucky as the Cheese Squatchers to know them. But this.
Hey, Daniel, so, I'll introduce you to them next week. How's that?
Well, you know, I have to talk to you about that real quick. I've already gave a heads up to a couple others. Plans change. I will not be able to attend down in Norman. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry about that one. But if you guys can manage to come out down to Harlan, Kentucky, I'll be down there in April. I'm speaking down in April. So. So
it would be fun. It would.
Well, I know you guys, you know, I know there's other events going in the surrounding area, which is actually working up pretty good. I can't believe there's so many events going on this year, and it's this is what I call, you know, it's going to be a very squatchy year, a very, very festive year when it comes to these kind of events, which is awesome. I know we're excited because we're already expecting a large turnout, and we're encouraging more and more people to come on out because our venue, there's no limit. I don't know. Does any conference ever turn out to be over, 1,000 people? I mean, our venue could hold over 1,500 people. That's how large it is. And the thing is, all our vendors, all our speakers will all have their own space. And it's going to be, you know, well put together. You know, we got movie producers that will be there. We got Bilko Productions, Mr. Bill Lancaster, who plans on being there to doing his film screening of Cultured Bigfoot, his new documentary. We have Mr. Dallas Morgan. Mr. Dallas Morgan is a resident, former resident from out of Virginia. He is actually a resident – yes, living in North Carolina right now. Well, he is a movie and film film director and producer. His latest film is called Sightings, which can be found on Amazon. His new sci-fi horror film is basically based off of one of the common theories that flood the Bigfoot world. And you know, for those who believe that there's a Bigfoot and UFO connection, His video, I've seen the trailer. If you have not seen it, it's the trailer to me was very thrilling. It's awesome. I can't wait to watch the whole video itself. But Mr. Dallas Morgan, he will be there doing a screening and also selling his DVDs, copies of his DVDs. So far we have two movie producers that will be on site doing their screenings, and you know, you'll be able to get copies of their videos and their work. So definitely check them out. Again, that's Bilko Productions and the movie premiere of Cultured Bigfoot. And then again, Dallas Morgan, which is actually Bright. I should have wrote it down, the name of his production company, but he's actually the producer and movie director. So you can find more information on that on Amazon. Also, we're actually working on doing a Dunkin' booth with a She Squash knowledge.
That's funny.
That is. It would be last fun, night, actually.
Last night he said he was trying to convince me to do it in a kissing booth. And I said, hey, now we already do that. We give out Hershey's Kisses to everybody.
Oh, yeah. Not get a kiss.
Well, I was going to bring that up, but I didn't think that was family friendly here. So. So
I had to switch it up. Our people, we hand out Hershey Kisses to everybody. It's so awesome.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, we're talking about the Bigfoot events and the conferences. Well, I I learned something about Jen and her response to Squatch mating calls. So,
I told them about how we have Bigfoot calling contests at other events, and how the guys down in Kansas City, when we were speaking at Kansas City Paracon, the guys were coming up to the booth and they're like, this is my mating call. Oh. And he's
I'm like,
hey, that girl, it's working.
Oh, funny.
I was just saying, we should have a Bigfoot calling contest down there, Daniel. It'll be fun. People love that.
Well, it's funny. After you actually brought that up to me, I'm kind of going back and forth in my mind. Because I actually, I was speaking with Ronald Moorhead earlier today through email, because which he's one of our speakers as well. Ronald Moorhead, you know, because he wanted to make sure I had all the information he originally sent me, which he's covered on that. The other thing I'm working on, which I seriously may have, Friday, June 29th, which I have yet to redo all the scheduling for everything that's going to take place with the speakers as well as the other, you know, miscellaneous little side events there. We're actually considering doing a VIP dinner, possibly. I haven't confirmed that yet. And the other thing was the doing a night hike exploration. So we may do that. For those who may not be able to attend our Campered expedition, so I might be able to take a few out on one, you know, in the National Forest local that's nearby. So
pick me.
There you go.
Jenna. Just make sure you keep your phone with her because she's famous for running off without it.
Oh no. Well, if you're gonna have your phone with you, we will go to the one local area because there is an area where the expedition is gonna be taking place, which is a dead zone. There's no phone service there. It's very remote. There's no plumbing there. The only running water is your stream or river that runs and feeds into the lake. You know, that's another thing I want everybody to know. There's a lot of people that I think we're expecting a great turnout as far as the camping itself goes, too. The camping, again, it is primitive camping. You know, there's no electricity, no phone signal.
No outhouses? Just,
there is an outhouse there. It is a, you know, it's National Forest outhouse. That's, you know, it's built on the site. It's like a little shack, you know, this permanently built there. And it's well maintained. The Forest Service, they you know, come by every day or every other day to service it. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, I was going to say, you know, way, way, way back when I was younger, that's the way we used to camp. There wasn't any electricity.
Yeah.
You know, you just go out there, you take what you need, and you make it work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but, you know, here's the thing. There's a, in the chat room, Blimp is, I think Blimp is volunteering to have a kissing booth, Daniel, but he says you're going to go broke. Funny.
Look here, Hey, look, I offered that little pipsqueak a little place to stay at my place here. You know? Let me stop.
Oh, too funny. Too funny.
Yes, that sounds great. You find yourself sleeping out back.
You are so fun.
He's putting himself out there. He's just putting himself out there for the ladies, I bet. So...
Zach, I tell you what, he's not shy. He's like 22, 23 years old. He ain't shy. He's.
Oh, is that Zach? I didn't know who it was.
Yeah,
I was
like, Zach Sterick.
Okay, hey.
Yeah.
I didn't know his nickname.
That little Illinois farm stud.
Wonderful, wonderful. So before you run out of any time, we want to hear more about, like, you. Like, have you always believed in Bigfoot? And can you share us a quick story about, have you seen Bigfoot or had a hair-raising experience? I know you have.
Well, as far as my belief in Bigfoot, to be honest with you, it's something – this is the way I always put this when I'm asked this question. Yes, it's something that's – kind of always been there. It's for, you know, growing up when you hear about things, whatever, you know, it was never a disbelief, but it's also something that you never really think about unless you have had an experience or seen something. But I tell you what opened my mind up to, you know, to look into it. It was when I first ever viewed footage of the Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin footage. Which I found very fascinating. And then on top of that, when you see a documentary, when science is involved, when you see graphic analyst Bill Munns involved, dissecting what they can on that video to try to find proof where they can't disprove it, everything points more towards it being authentic than it is anywhere being hoaxed. Nothing could be matched or compared on that video. And tell you what, that there really opened up a new world to me. Cause you know, I'm somebody who grew up in the woods. I'm very familiar with wildlife. I grew up in the world, you know, that surrounds us. And I just found myself more alert, more paying attention, more attention, more observant. It really did. I found myself taking notice of things that, you know, so many of us probably still neglect, you know. Excuse me. Well, you know, and then just over the years, things improved, things advanced for me over the years. And, you know, like, you know, I just found myself wanting to learn more, you know, just when that, cause it, like I said, after seeing that video footage and everything that opened up, the, you know, this new world, it's, there was a more of a stronger curiosity that grew. And then that curiosity grew into a passion to want to know more about the truth. You know, I wanted to find things. I wanted to start discovering things. And, you know, and it's been a long time. And, you know, throughout the years, I have come across things. And it may not be as much as others, you know. And then again, it may, you know, it's whatever. You know, I've come across, I do try to study and compare a lot of wildlife. Because one thing, if people need to understand something, you know, and this goes for anybody new, anyone that's been in this for whatever, how long. I know there's a lot of people that call themselves experts, and there's no experts whatsoever. But, you know, the thing is, there's people out there that don't know nothing about wildlife, but yet they're going to go after and call themselves a Bigfoot researcher. And that's what puzzles me, is because how can you go researching something that is considered unknown and you don't know what is known? You know, they're going out there blindfolded. And, you know, when they're making every claim, they're, you know, they're just deceiving themselves among deceiving others. And that's what the, to me, it's kind of a big shame, you know. And then yet I'm, you know, I was being called an error for pointing a lot of this out. I was very blunt. And, you know, I was called a hater, and, you know, and so I mellowed out. I said, okay, well, people want to live in a fantasy. Let them be in their fantasy. You know, it's just, you know, I just, like I said, I was always very blunt, and I got hated for it, which it still doesn't bother me. I am known to be very blunt at times. I'm unique. I don't want to be like, you know, well, hey, you don't, so-and-so is well-known in the Bigfoot community. He don't talk much. Oh, that's them. I'm not him. I'm Daniel Benoit. You know, I don't care if you take me or leave it. You know, like me or hate me. I'm going to be me. I don't care. You know, I'm going to stand apart from everybody. I don't want to be like them. I don't want to be like these big names. I'm not Dr. Jeff Meldrum. You know, I'm big in my own way. You know, I don't have to have his degree to be big. You know, right, I'm who right. I am. So, I mean.
Hey, you're here with us. That's saying something right there.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, I kind of feel like it's a double date.
Well, it kind of is tonight.
Kind of like a double date. Sarge is in the background. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I cannot wait to meet you in person, because you are so much fun and you're real. And I love that about people. When they're real, it makes you so much more wonderful to talk to, and I love your attitude, and you're so fun.
Thank you. You know, I know you guys, a lot of people are knowing, getting to know me with a beard, you know, and the thing is, I love having the beard, but there's a big part of me that's, you know, I'm fighting against myself here. I was like, because I don't always have a beard. I always have very little hair on my face, and everyone, even my coworkers, like, keep it. Then I got people say, go ahead, shave it. You know, I was like, you know, so, you know, some people, like I said, I have gotten to know me with a beard. So if I do shave, a lot of people are not going to recognize me as, you know, who I am, you know. But so I don't know. I'm kind of going this thing. I want to keep the beard because, you know, and then let my other, you know, let the rest of my hair, because I usually keep my hair on my head fairly short. So I'm, you know, a lot of people say, yo, you look good with a mountain man look. I say, well, whatever. But the beard's kind of getting in the way of a few things, you know. So I don't know.
Hey, I know how warm it gets in Virginia in the summertime, so I'm not going to fault you if you have to shave it off. I know I would do it in a heartbeat. It's way too hot out there.
Well, last year when I went to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, Michael Cook from Kentucky, he kind of put me on the spot, because I had, you know, I had very short hip trim facial hair when I went there, and I had my head shaved. And here I am right next to Cliff Barackman, getting ready to have my picture taken with Cliff, and Michael Cook's getting ready to take our picture. And right before he takes a picture, he's looking at me. He's like, dude, did you dye your beard? I said, just take the picture. You know, because I had dyed As you guys see, I got plenty of gray, but in the beard. But I had my hair. I was neatly, shortly groomed and trimmed. And then, you know, he had to call me out, which, you know, I'm looking back. I was like, yeah, seems like they were several years ago. But then I'm like, no, that was just last year, you know. Oh, so, yeah. But I don't know. Some people say I should do it again. Some people say it looked pretty good. I don't know. That's the first time I ever dyed anything. So.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm a friend. The hair dye is my friend. I'm telling you. Tomorrow's my I have a date with Emma tomorrow morning. She's going to get my all beautified. So.
Oh. I should have took pictures of my daughter. She made a mess with the bathroom the other day, and she dyed her hair Smurfy blue.
Oh, it's fabulous.
It's, you know, it's not bad. It's different. I've seen her with the purple hair, but this is blue. It's a little different. I've seen her with purple and pink, but
I wonder what Bigfoot would think if he'd come in closer to have a look at what is this blue hair thing going on. I wonder if that would make him curious.
You know, that's a good one. I don't know. I never thought about that. I mean, how often do you think of you could you think about people going out there dressing funky and bright and spunky, whatever you want to call it, you know?
Right.
Well, so
that almost leads me to a question. Do you think that Bigfoot, do you think they can see color, or do you think it's like us where some of us can see color and some of us can't?
You know, that's a good question. We can't say that they don't, or we can't say that they do, but that's something that we haven't gotten that far to really, you know, to examine them. Hopefully we'll learn more if that opportunity ever arises to anyone that's willing to examine and publicize that information. Because there's so much that we have yet to learn about these. The only thing we know is what we observe, you know. But I believe that they do. I don't see why they couldn't, you know. Some animals are believed to only see, you know, very few different colors, you know. They're limited on their color. So that's a very tricky one, you know. You know, they a lot of people believe them to be human. So for those who do believe that they are human, or some call it human hybrid, why not? You know. So
well, have they figured out whether gorillas and different primates? I guess you know more about that than I do.
Yeah, there is. Trying to think, it's been a while since I actually have a study I've done on that, and. Are no non-human primates. Their eyes, a lot of them have – there's certain words I can't pull up right now. There is parts of the eye trying to think the best way to explain this because I haven't done this in a long time.
I'm sorry.
No. You're absolutely all right. It's just I have done a study on their eyes, mainly on their eye shine because, you know, eye shine has been a big topic in the past. Which there's other information that I read on regarding their information. Cause I have a study on my blog site, not my website, which maybe later on I'll add it to the website. But, yeah, there's information regarding their vision, on how they see things. So I'm going to be safe and just say, I'm not going to try to really explain on, or try to throw it out there. Without looking at notes or my information that I do have, because it's been a long time since I've really gotten into this one. So, but, you know, I do believe it's a kind of the same situation as humans. I believe there's a 50-50 opportunity or possibility. You know, a lot of our known non-human primates, a lot of them you'll see with a goldish brown to a gold tint, you know, and then the biggest thing I will tell you about a primate, a non-human primate, is one thing they don't really have that we do have. There's a scientific term for it, but the white of our eyes. Yeah. Some is very, very rare, but some have blotches of white. You know, again, there is a scientific phrase or term for this, which I'm not going to try to think of it right offhand, but there is another name for it. So yeah, there is some very similar traits that they have that we have, but yet they're not, you know, they don't have blue eyes or green eyes like me and you.
Color do they, you know, when you talk about eye shine, what color do you think Sasquatch eye shine is? Do they shine?
Well, yes, they do, most definitely. Now, you hear a lot of people talking about red eye shine, seeing red eye shine, especially at night. And just before I go any further, there is one very common species that has red eye shine that is proven to have red eye shine, is bears. I've seen both in the daytime. I've been, you know, and I'm not talking about being in a vehicle, seeing one cross the road. I've had a lot of daytime encounters with black bears, you know, during my hikes and explorations. But at nighttime, I've seen so many black bears cross the road on me, you know, and the lights hit it. Their eyes reflect red. And, you know, because they're the brown. If you look at a black bear's eyes, they're like a dark brown, give or take, you know. And their eyes have that red color tint. It's like kind of like when you got an old cheap camera or you don't have the what's a red
infrared?
No, it's you know how you have some pictures. If you take pictures, you look at the picture after it's been printed. It's got the red eye. Your eyes should appear red. Yep. Same thing. A bear's eyes will look the same exact way. You know, as you're looking at them, in, you know, in person. So I do believe that eye shine. When a lot of people refer to red being related to Bigfoot, Sasquatch, I believe that could be a misidentified feature. Then again, maybe not so much. It's just, you know, now from what I wasn't alone. I observed, this is back in 2014. It was during one of our expeditions, and we had an encounter. And we were out doing an exploration. We were about a mile away from our camp. And when we were returning back to camp, because, you know, we were spread out all around the lake, and we were doing a little investigation, you know, but here it is after midnight. You know, we're working our way back towards camp. We all have our headlamps on, you know, just walking along the forest road, checking the, you know, going back and forth, looking in the woods, looking for, you know, looking for eye shine, actually, you know. Here it is at nighttime. If there's anything in there, we're going to catch our eye shine. And it's exactly what we were looking for, you know. But after seeing a deer, you know, on, you know, not just taking his time, nonchalant, walking away from us, something else caught our attention. Well, I was the first one to see this because, you know, what I was first seeing was something bright and yellow glowing, or at least what I thought was just reflecting. And one of the common things that in the research area, my research area, or throughout the whole national forest in random locations, are these little yellow metal plaque signs on some trees, which basically they're giving you a, you know, just a warning or not to, you know, ride in this area, whatever it may be. Well, when I first caught my light first caught glimpse of this, it was out of focus. I couldn't see. I was trying to look because at that particular time, when I first noticed it, I was a little distant. As I got closer to it, I noticed that when I first learned it was eye shine, it's because it blinked its eyes at me. And when I seen the eyes blink, I freaked out. I mean, I didn't quite freak out. I was like, I didn't know what to think because Tracy Arnold, he was right behind me. I said, Tracy Arnold, I said, you got to get up here. I said, there's eye shine right there. And then his eyes locked onto it. He saw it too. And after we got up to the area, because whatever that was went off to the woods, because one of the first things I said, is that a cougar? Is that a mountain lion? You know, like I said, we're not seeing what it is. We're just seeing the eye shine. But the eyes were pretty bright and large. But then the rest of the group got up there. And when they all got up into the area where we were observing this, whatever that was that was close to the road ran back. But we're noticing it. We all saw it together. And we noticed whatever was kind of low to the ground. So, and it's kind of doing this number. It's swaying side to side, you know. And think about it. You know, at this time, we're not thinking about, okay, what animal is going to be swaying side to side like that? You know, we're not seeing no silhouette. We're not seeing nothing but the eye shine. And then moments later, we took notice right to the right of that one, there was another one. But here it is, much taller. And keep in mind, at this particular time, we did not realize that the ground sloped down from the forest road. It sloped down at least a good several feet. Well, after observing that, we seen another one. But, you know, I know we're out of time, so I'll let you guys go.
I'm like, oh, it's a cliffhanger. I want to hear the rest of the story, but we are out of time.
I see you're gonna give me the signal.
Will you come back? Will you come back on the show another time and finish your story?
No, I'll be honored.
Another date?
Yes.
Another double date?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, Jenna. Oh, Jenna, she's terrible. So thank you, Daniel Benoit, for coming on with ECBRO, and he's putting on the ECBRO Virginia Bigfoot Conference this June 30th and July 1st. Come out and see us. We will be there. The She-Squatchers will be there.
Yes.
And so will Zach and Daniel and everybody will be there. So come check us out. And hey, Papa Stroll is in the chat room. Say hi, everybody. He's a professional wrestler coming back to see us tonight. So shout out to Papa Stroll. And next week, I will be off. I will have the night off. And
she's leaving on a jet plane.
Seriously, I'm leaving.
Good voice.
I will be out and about in Virginia, going to the premiere of the documentary that I was featured in, Cultured Bigfoot. So I'll be there. So Clayton Crawford will be taking over for the night, and he'll be dispatching demons with demonologists. So tune in Wednesday night and the week, right after next week's show. Stay tuned to Radio Wasteland because the She-Squatchers will be being interviewed after that. So see you next week. Chill out, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.